Dobro jutro vsem poslušalcem v tole dopoldansko nedeljo. Verjamemo, da ste še malo zaspani, ampak mi vam bomo vseeno zavrteli oddajo EP Interaktivno z naslovom Aktualne debate. Poslušali boste intervjuja z dvema poslankama, ki smo jih naredili medtem, ko smo bili v Strasbourgu na začetku maja. Zdaj pa predajam še besedo Borisu.
Gre za vsem dobro poznano Ljudmilo Novak iz Nove Slovenije, sicer v Sloveniji izven parlamentarne stranke, ampak še kako parlamentarne znotraj evropskega prostora. Druga poslanka pa je Diane Wallace iz skupine Zavezništva liberalcev in demokratov za Evropo.
Dobro, jaz bi povedal najprej izbiro. Diane Wallis smo izbrali zato, ker je ona lansirala predlog v Evropski parlament, in sicer predlog prepovedi trgovanja z izdelki iz tjulnjev. Ta predlog je tudi bil sprejet med tistim plenarnim zasedanjem, ko smo mi bili tam, tako da smo s tem začeli. Ampak Diane je bila tudi v Palestini leta 2008, je videla vse te grozote, in potem seveda tematika je bila širša, šli smo na Palestino, na Lizbonsko pogodbo in tako dalje. Mogoče pa zdaj še Boris kaj doda.
Šlo je za predlog prepovedi trgovanja z izdelki iz tjulnjev v komercialne namene, ne? Tem, da tradicionalni lov še vedno se da opravljati. Zanimivo je, da tudi na Škotskem nekaj še vedno lovijo pač z oznako tradicionalno, zato ker tiste torbice, ki jih imajo ob kiltih škotski možje, v bistvu so tradicionalno narejeni iz kože tjulnja, tako da to je vse neka izjema. Tako teh izjem je nepar, ampak vseeno gre za nek napredek pri dojemanju te prakse do tjulnov. In skratka, predlog je bil, ko so ljudmi takrat tam sprejet, na veselje tjulnov in ljubiteljev živali. Tako da, kaj, bi kar spustili ta intervju?
Ja, mogoče najprej spustimo ta intervju, potem pa še morda povemo razlog, zakaj smo naredili intervju z Ljudmilo Novak. Torej, poslušamo sedaj intervju z Diano Volis.
How did it actually come to this ban on trading with seed products? What was the main reason? Who was behind this
Initiative.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, about 18 months, 2 years ago, there was a so-called written declaration in the Parliament that was signed, I think, by over 400 members, MEPs, that asked for a ban on the trade in seal products. And as a result of that, the Commission came forward with a legislative proposal. And so we've arrived where we have now this week, with finally an agreement on a directive. But I think we have to be clear that what we are doing is banning the trade within the EU on products from a commercial seal hunt. So there is still the possibility, if the seals have been hunted for sustainable reasons to do with sustaining fisheries industry, or if they have been hunted by indigenous peoples, so Inuit communities, then there is still a possibility that they will appear on the EU market.
But what does it mean, sustainable fishing or
Well,
hunting?
obviously there is a problem. Seals eat a huge amount of fish. And that provides a big problem in some areas, particularly Norwegians would say, and perhaps even the Swedes. So there is a need to keep the population under control.
We have still three countries in EU who are trading with seals. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
There's Scotland, Norway, and
Scotland, Norway, Sweden, and Finland to an extent, and of course Denmark. Well, the point is, there will still be the possibility. We're not legislating about hunting at all, and that has to be clear. So people can continue to hunt. It's just a question of how the hunt was conducted and by whom and what for. And if it's not commercial, we don't want to think that the products of the hunt are just going to be thrown away. That would be ridiculous. But you know, if it was sustainable and if it was from an indigenous community, then it can come onto the market, but only then.
If I'm not mistaken, there is a mention of traditional hunting,
Exactly.
and Great Britain is mentioned. that traditional hunting goes on in Great Britain. I'm not mistaken, I read it yesterday, that the Inuits, we talked about it yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were wondering what kind of traditional hunting goes on in Great Britain, or are we mistaken?
There's no traditional hunting, certainly not by Inuits in Great Britain.
Yeah,
anyway.
Of course, but there
may be some very limited hunting in Scotland, mm-hmm. In order, again, to do with fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that I don't know how much you know about Scottish national dress. But okay. the men also wear something called a sporran, which is like a purse,
mm-hmm.
and traditionally that has been made out of seal fur. So, but I don't see, you know, great bands of Scots going hunting seals for this reason.
Okay,
so maybe we can go to. You were in Palestine last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
And maybe I would ask one question, considering that, because we know that Potterink yesterday said in his speech that one of the important things of EP in last mandate was that EP condemned the attack of Israeli to Palestine on Palestine. And how do you see the role of EP considering that attack of Israeli on Palestine?
Well, on one level, the European Parliament doesn't have any sort of legislative power in foreign mm-hmm. affairs, but clearly we have a huge voice and persuasive powers when it comes to human rights issues. And whatever people's feelings, I think, between sort of Palestine and Israel, people were horrified at what went on in Gaza, and the Parliament has been quite strong and firm in the resolutions that we have passed and what has been said about that. And of course there is still the issue of what we do with the EU-Israel agreement.
Mm-hmm. In general, the relation between European Union and the whole conflict in the Middle East. How do you see European Union, effectively doing something? Because all the time what we hear is a sort of accusations, very soft accusations of Israel and Palestinian violence on both sides. So it's relativizing the violence on both sides. When it mentions violence, it says, on one hand, we condemn the violence of Israel. On the other hand, we must not forget violence of the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
This is the balance which I don't think is an equal. There cannot be an equal balance in that matter. How come the European Union does not act more effectively, more strongly against Israel for the violations of human rights, which is one of the postulates of European Union?
I think the European Union is doing as much as it can, in the sense that, you know, the European Union per se is not a military power, it's a soft power that, as you say, tries to defend human rights. We have done our utmost to help the Palestinian people in terms of helping them build their administration, helping them with all sorts of means. Could we be, as you say, stronger on perhaps the Palestinian side or stronger against the Israelis? I think probably in the last months the Parliament has moved in that direction in terms of the hesitation over the agreement with Israel, in terms of what many members do in trying to highlight what is going on in Palestine. If you think only a few weeks ago now, we had a huge exhibition here from Hebron, and we had the mayor of Hebron here to try to make people understand what's going on. And if you also see what a lot of members do in their own countries, I mean, we've had an issue in the UK of, may sound a small thing, but goods, sort of herbs and things being sold in big British supermarkets saying that they come from the West Bank, and people think they're from Palestine when actually they're Israeli, and there's been huge public pressure to get that stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things like that, and I think what happened in Gaza was terrible, but it has helped raise public awareness in many European countries. And I think, in a sense, that begins to turn the tide.
In the end, public awareness must at one point be transformed into political decision.
Exactly. But what I'm saying, the public awareness and the change in terms of public opinion is happening, is shifting, and that will probably allow us to speak with greater strength in the coming months. I'm sure of that.
How come, for example, I think Belarus is under some kind of sanctions from the European Union. Yugoslavia was under sanctions. There is a lot of talk about sanctioning so-called rogue states, if I can use that term. Isn't Israel a rogue state? I mean, shouldn't Israel deserve, not the people of Israel, I'm talking about the state of Israel, of course. Shouldn't the state of Israel deserve some sort of economic sanctions, since European Union is economic superpower? That could be our super weapon.
Well, that's what I say to you. In a way, that's happened in many European countries, that public opinion has taken think matters into its own hands to try to stop buying Israeli goods. And it's quite clear, there have been reports that this is having an effect on the Israeli, their exports and their economy. So things are happening anyway. Should the EU take a definite stand? I believe personally that we could do more. I have sympathy with what you say. But you cannot underestimate the strength still of the Israeli lobby.
Can you be more specific on that? That's an interesting subject. We always talk about the Israel-Jewish lobby in the world. Everybody talks about it. Nobody in the public has any direct specific information about that. It's just like a fog.
It's as much like fog to me. I mean, I'm just aware of how there seems to be an influence on people's thinking. All I would say to people, much as I did, if you have the chance, go and visit Palestine, the West Bank, for yourself, and see what it means to live like that. Because I think if anybody sees what's called the wall and sees the way that people have to live, I mean, it is such a shock to anybody who comes from Europe in terms of what we enjoy in free movement and everything else that we cherish in terms of our values. You only have to spend 24 hours there to see how absurd this is.
Because you come from Great Britain, how would you comment the role of your state in occupation of Iraq? We know that this time England, actually Great Britain, started to
remove its soldiers
from Iraq. How would you comment this?
I'm pleased that it's happening. My own party in the UK was always vehemently opposed to the war. We were the only party that was.
This is Liberal Party.
Yeah, Liberal Party. Yeah, Liberal Democrats. So obviously, I'm pleased that the troops are now coming out. It seems that conditions are improving in Iraq, and I hope that continues to be the case. Mm-hmm. But I was never comfortable with the reasons for why we went to war. Seemed to me very questionable.
Did you believe this story about the weapons of mass destruction?
No. I think I found the whole thing very unconvincing. Mm-hmm. The legal argument put forward by our government was very thin.
If I can relate this subject to the previous subject of Palestine, with the historic role of Great Britain in the Middle East, we know what the Great Britain has done with drawing borders and such. If we focus on Middle East, shouldn't Great Britain, because of its, let's call it a moral obligation towards that part of the world, be a bit more aggressive in a diplomatic sense and a political sense towards Israel again, or towards any violator of human rights in the Middle East, since Great Britain is one of historical patronizers of violating human rights in that area? Just to redeem itself, maybe in a historical sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure how far that figures in our current national consciousness, if I can say. I feel that we have a certain obligation, but I'm not sure how great that understanding is generally. We left all sorts of, how can I say, unfortunate legacies in the Middle East from our days of empire and whatever. And yes, I think we do have an obligation, but I'm not sure how people there would wish to see us interfere again. And maybe it is not a bad thing that we have people like former Prime Minister Blair in this role of trying to move things forward. Although I have to say I've been hugely disappointed with his, I would scarcely say, achievements to date. As a mediator, I would have thought he could have done much more. But there we are.
Can I ask, do you see the Hamas as a terroristic movement?
How can you see something as just a terrorist movement when it's also something that people have voted for in democratic elections?
No, I'm asking because it is on the list of the United States.
I know.
And European Union.
Yes, as well. That's why I'm asking that.
It clearly has a duality in the sense that, yes, we know there are terrorists, but yes, we also know there are political operators who have been voted for. I would hope that other forces manage to succeed in terms of leadership in Palestine. But you have to respect what people vote for.
But, yes,
and if you want to achieve a solution, sometimes you maybe have to talk to people you don't like talking to.
As I know, they are also a strong social movement, Hamas. So this is also this duality.
If, for example, Palestine achieves its statehood, Hamas would be subsequently transformed into its army. The structures of Hamas, I mean, would be in part transformed into military structure of the state with its potential and infrastructure that it already has. Then it would cease to be a terroristic organization in the view of European Union without anything change.
Not necessary.
I mean, that depends. I don't have a crystal ball to see what would happen the other side. But I also think if you had a political solution in Palestine, the need for terrorist or other activity would then have gone, as we've seen in Northern Ireland. If you can remove the causes of conflict, then you take away the cause from those who wish to use violence.
Maybe you mentioned that before, but just for information, do you maybe know how many members of parliament was to Palestine?
That's an interesting question. I really wouldn't like to guess, but I would think there's a lot of members that feel strongly, are interested. So, yeah, but it'd be very difficult to give you a figure.
Are they more from the left, political orientation, in general?
Not necessarily. I mean, I have a conservative colleague in my region in the United Kingdom, Mr. Edward McMillan Scott, who's also been very active. So it doesn't, it doesn't necessarily have to be people from the left. And I would also say, I just reiterate, if people go and see, as Europeans and as fair-minded Europeans, I do not see that they cannot be shocked by what they experience. Yeah.
You come from traditionally quite Eurosceptical country. How would you comment current Czech presidency of EU and quite unusual statements of President Václav Klaus?
Well, yes, my country is historically Eurosceptic. Is the Euroscepticism of the same brand as Mr. Vaclav Klaus? No, I don't think so. British Euroscepticism has its roots in very different causes. It's partly to do with being an island. It's partly to do with having once had an empire and a commonwealth and not having quite got used to not having the same status as we once enjoyed. Many things, but I also think that Britain and most British people are more European than they realise they are. And it's strange, but I think if you actually were able to put the question to the British people, do you want to leave the European Union? In other words, if you put it that way around, I think the answer you would get would be no, they don't want to leave. Because I think we don't like change. We've got used to where we are. And if you scratch the surface, it is quite a European and a tolerant country.
Do you think that second Irish referendum will succeed?
I hope it will succeed.
In what direction?
Yes.
With a yes, of course. But it will take political leadership and it will take more activity from Ireland's political classes than some of them were willing to dedicate to it.
Yes, but do you think that this is political fair, that people said no in the first referendum and then they will have it again and then maybe again, I don't know. Is this the
That's for them to decide. The fact that they're given a second chance to vote, and they did it once before with the Nice Treaty, if they still don't like it, they can say no again.
They can say no, but what then? Then maybe they will say to them, time to step out or what, if you don't want that.
We talked to a Slovenian member of parliament yesterday from the Conservative Party, Ljudmila Novak, and she said it's unjust, and she used that word specifically, it's unjust that the Irish are saying no to the Lisbon Treaty, since every other state has adopted it, including the Czech Republic.
I agree with you in that instance. Why should one country dictate the pace of everybody else? And again, it's a problem of the development of the European Union, in the sense that if you took a sort of federal or confederal model, like, say, Switzerland, and imagined a Europe on that model, you would have to have, or you would accept, a majority of states and a majority of the people. Now, we have a majority of the states saying yes, so why are we being held up?
Yes, but this would be a funny situation if Ireland would say the second time no. Do you think that then... What?
There would be some pressure from the other states to the Irish Republic that it has to go step out of the European Union, maybe.
Well, who can say? We're not there yet, and we hope we won't be there. But I don't necessarily say this should be the case, but you know there have been sort of veiled hints that, well, if Ireland doesn't want to participate or says no again, do they get a commissioner?
Yes, but maybe, yes, one question, maybe this is a hypothetical question, maybe it would be the best thing that European Union would have all the countries referendum in the same time about the Lisbon Treaty, and then we would see what the people mean from all the countries. What do you think about that? Of course, this we don't have that instrument,
no,
but...
We are, some of us asked for it, and it was actually voted for positively by the Parliament, that there should be a referendum throughout Europe on the same day, because then people would be forced to consider it as a European issue, as a European voting, rather than voting on it within a national context, and therefore always you run the risk that you get an answer that has more to do with sort of the vagaries of national politics at that moment than to do with the actual question on the paper.
I would like to point out what you said earlier about Ireland not participating. If Ireland doesn't want to participate, it should reconsider its role in the European Union. But the fact of the matter is, it is participating. With the democratic choices it has, it's participating in the voting regarding the Lisbon Treaty, and it says no. So we cannot say it does not want to participate. It participates, but with another intention.
Yeah, but
which is democratic.
Yeah, which is absolutely democratic. But normally, when something's democratic and a smaller part or a minority says no, the larger part that has won the argument is still able to move on. But in this case, we have to wait, we have to continue perhaps to negotiate or modify until we're able to all move on together.
Why? If you don't have any questions,
I have one question.
Okay, I'll just finish with that. How come? What's your opinion about the no in the referendum in France and the Netherlands and Irish Republic in Ireland? For example, in Slovenia, when it was the president of the presidency of European Union was Slovenian, we passed the Lisbon Treaty in Parliament like that, in like half an
like
hour.
Many other.
It was magic. Nobody even knew anything about the Lisbon Treaty, and our government said a funny thing. It said, this is the way Slovenia wants to show some, apply some pressure on the bigger states to, like Germany, for example. And it was trying to show some pressure on other states without the people even knowing what the Lisbon Treaty is about. I mean, the vast majority of people don't even know about the Lisbon Treaty, let alone certain article or something, details. How come the people, when they have the chance to vote, they say no, and the parliament say yes?
But that's not entirely true, because there was a successful referendum in Spain and elsewhere. And that's why I think, obviously, it often depends on the national context. I believe passionately in the use of referendums. I wish we had had one in the UK, because I think it's the only way of getting a proper debate about European issues. So I'm not scared of referendums, and I think they should be used properly, as it were, to inform and to educate and to make sure that people are comfortable with where we're going. But the problem is, in many member states, there is no culture or political tradition of using referendums. And that gives you the problem that when you suddenly descend with a referendum and it's not properly prepared, you can often get an answer that you don't like, for all sorts of extraneous reasons. But obviously with the Dutch and the French, there was a no, but as a result of that no, modifications were made to the final result.
Okay. May I ask you the last question? As a member of Liberal Party, where do you see the reasons for breakdown of financial markets?
Well, there are many causes, but for example, if I look at my own country, which of course in London has a huge financial centre, I think there was some culpability in allowing financial sector to free a rein. There was not enough strength in the regulatory system that we had in the UK. It was too light touch. And the government was too hands-off in dealing with it. We saw this specifically because in this parliament I led an inquiry into the collapse of the British insurer and pension provider Equitable Life. We did that now 2 years ago. We produced a huge report because people lost savings and investment across the European Union as a result of that failure. And it was quite clear from that the regulatory system was not strong enough, and even in that sense that existing European legislation that might have helped had not been honoured and implemented properly. So I believe that, you know, we could have done more to...
Do we need more integration of the state?
What we need is a greater ability for regulators of financial institutions across Europe and beyond to work together. That is now happening, but it's a bit late. It should have been foreseen a long time ago that we needed that.
How do you react when you see graffitis in the streets smash capitalism?
Look, as a liberal and as a European, you have to have trade, and I'm never going to subscribe to any form of protectionism. I come from a coastal area in the UK where we have the biggest port complex in my country. We all live by trade and free markets, but what we have to be prepared to do is put a human face on it. In other words, make sure that we get the balance right. And it's my belief that as Europe moves on in the next mandate of this Parliament, that we should pay a great deal more attention to people. And in the sense that we achieved Europe's internal market with all the legislation that led up to 1992 and all the, you know, the fanfare that there was about that, which was wonderful. What we now have to do is make much more of a reality for people, for the free movement of people. And that has to be given much more priority, and all the surrounding legal framework that makes sure that people can move and live their lives in security and protected anywhere in Europe.
You think capitalism is able to provide that?
No, I think capitalism, hand in hand with the appropriate balancing factors, can. But you can't, you know, capitalism itself is... You're still controlling a market. You're accepting that the market works in a certain way. So I've never bought the argument that capitalism is free. You make choices about how you regulate. Therefore, I'm saying that you need to regulate the free flow to provide the free flow, but you also need to balance with much more positive assistance on a European level to really achieve free movement, really to allow people to work and live in one another's countries, but feeling that they also have clear rights as Europeans in one another's countries.
So instead of smash capitalism, you would write change capitalism?
Yeah, I could go with that.
Okay. We can go do Sanger Firis.
To change.
So...
Reformed capitalism.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Where do you use this on your
student? Yes,
it is on our website. www.radiostudent.si.
No, dragi poslušalci, drage poslušalke, od reformatorke kapitalizma se pomikamo naprej k eliminatorki komunizma, Ljudmili Novak. To je tudi bil en od razlogov, zakaj sem se odločil narediti njen intervju, poleg tega, da je pač tam na voljo v svoji pisarni. Prav v tistem času je bila vroča debata v Sloveniji oziroma v Ljubljani o poimenovanju neke nove ceste po Titu, čemur seveda v Novi Sloveniji ostro nasprotujejo, in smo šli se o tem malo pogovoriti z Ljudmilo.
Ja, ona je v bistvu izhajala iz tega, no se to je zdaj cela gonja. Njeni argument izhaja iz tega, ker je bil, ne vem, en mesec nazaj Evropski parlament sprejel ta, recimo, temu famozen sklep, da je treba obsoditi vse totalitarizme v Evropi, pod kar je štel fašizem, nacizem in pa na koncu komunizem. Se pravi, da se recimo ta desna struja zavzema tudi za prepovedi zvest kot simbolov. Mislim, da se to v eni baltski državi celo že zgodilo. Ampak ja, začeli smo potem seveda z Titotom in šli malo naprej na komunizem in tako dalje.
Smo se vse dotaknili tudi Lizbonske pogodbe. Slišali boste zanimive argumentacije v zvezi z demokratičnimi principi odločanja in slišali boste precej zanimivo dojemanje demokracije kot take.
Ja, na koncu bi lahko rekli random logic.
Skratka, dragi poslušalci, drage poslušalke, odličen intervju z Ljudmilo Novak. Bodite pozorni, ko bo govorila o referendumu na Irskem, ki je seveda se izkazal za negativnega za tiste, ki želijo sprejeti Lizbonsko pogodbo. Boste slišali tudi, kdo je vse imel prste vmes.
Ja, moramo še povedati pri temu intervjuju, da je bil prisoten zraven tudi njen asistent, tako da na neko vprašanje sta kombinirano odgovarjala, oziroma je tudi on odgovoril, tako da ta moški glas, ki boste slišali, je njen asistent.
Tako je, to je moški glas, mi smo pa štiri deški glasovi, šli smo namreč Igor, Tadej, Urh in Boris. Ljudmila Novak.
No, ne začnemo s tem, ko recimo... Kakšen je bil odziv vaših kolegov v parlamentu na vašo omembo situacije v Sloveniji glede poimenovanja po Titu, glede poimenovanja ulice po Titu?
Ja, mnogi so me vprašali, če je to res ali se samo hecam. Jaz sem pa rekla, da pač na žalost je to res in sem ponovila to, da pač me žalosti, da ta resolucija, ki jo je tako s tako veliko podporo sprejel Evropski parlament, da ni pri nas tudi naletela na plodna tla, da bi enkrat realno pogledali našo preteklost in potem na podlagi tega tudi lažje živeli svojo prihodnost.
Tle mene zanima na posebno vprašanje, tudi včeraj smo se obeležili krajše slovesnosti od spodi ob peti obletnici širitve, ne? In mislim, da je tudi predsednik parlamenta Petering zelo poudaril, ne, to enačenje zla, ki ga je prinesel tako komunizem kot nacizem, ne. Tako mi glede pozabil je fašizem moment, ne, ampak vseeno zanima me, verjetno se vsi strinjamo, da pač v konkretnih izpeljavah obeh ideologij, ne, je bilo zelo velik napak, da ne rečemo, da ne omenimo kakšne hujše besede, ne. Ampak s tem, ko je načno ti dve ideologije, recimo...
Tukaj se ne bomo stavo strinjati.
S tem, ko je načno obe teli ideologiji, ali to pomeni recimo tudi, da pomeni zavzemanje, ne vem, za pravice delavcev, ali pa za pravice do participacije delavcev v gospodarstvu. A ne pomeni to na en način, da s tem diskreditiramo, ko diskreditiramo, diskreditiramo komunizem, diskreditiramo tudi zavzemanje za vse te pravice. Če pozabimo zgodovinsko izpeljavo ideologije.
No, zdaj mi tukaj smo govorili o zgodovini Evrope, a ne? In jaz sama pravim, da pravzaprav vsi trije totalitarizmi so šli čez Slovenijo in Slovencem povzročili veliko zla, ki ga še danes občutimo. Najprej tako fašizem kot nacizem in potem pa seveda tudi komunizem, ki jaz nikoli ne govorim proti partizanstvu, nikoli, ker vem, da je bil to dober namen, ker upor proti okupatorju je nesporno dober namen, obsojam pa tisto, kar je potem pa komunistično vodstvo zahtevalo od partizanov. Ne, vse so se tudi mnogi partizani temu uprli, pa so zato bili ustreljeni ali pa kaznovani. To napako jaz očitam temu sistemu, ker je na podlagi ideologije so potem oni odstranjevali bistvo tako zvane nasprotnike, ki morda niti niso bili nasprotniki, ampak niso podpirali komunizma. In če pogledamo zgodovino, je pravzaprav na podlagi tudi tega, ker je prišlo do teh pomorov, nedolžni in tako naprej. Zaradi tega je potem so nastale vaške straže in domobranci, kar je pa seveda potem spet novo zlo prineslo, ko so se Slovenci med sabo, ampak moramo vedeti, se zavedati, kaj je pravzaprav povzročilo nastanek tega. Ne? Kakorkoli že, jaz ne trdim, da so domobranci delali vse prav, v mojem sorodstvu ni ne partizanov, pa ne domobrancev. Jaz sem doma Štajerske, ker so šli v nemško vojsko, ker so bili takoj upoklicani. Tako da z tega vidika moramo pač pogledati, kako je do tega prišlo. Ne? Vsekakor je pa zločin, kar se je dogajalo po vojni. Ker po vseh mednarodnih konvencijah pobijati vojne ujetnike je zločin. In vemo, da danes takim vsem sodijo na mednarodnem sodišču. Zato jaz se ne morem strinjati s tem, da vemo, kdo je bil odgovoren za vse te zločine, ki so se zgodili v Sloveniji in v Jugoslaviji. To seveda najbolj odgovoren je tisti, ki ima največjo funkcijo v tej državi. In zato ne morem jaz sprejemati tega, da zdaj razglašamo ponovno Tita za junaka in heroja, ker po drugi strani pa vemo, koliko ljudi še trpi zdaj, ker ne ve, kje so njihovi svojci, ker so bili njihovi svojci po krivici, obtoženi izdajalstva in tako naprej. Ne?
Jaz znam te točke zelo, zelo kratko. Kar je kolega vredno tudi hotel spostaviti, je ta razlika med implementacijo nacizma, ne, v praksi,
ja.
Ker nacizem je že v sami izhodišču neke vrste zločinske ideologije. Ne.
Seveda.
Za komunizem tega ne moramo trditi.
Vzimo,
implementacija komunizma absolutno je bila, tukaj bila, rekel, da so se dogajale napake. Pri nacizmu napak ni bilo, ampak je bil izvršen tako, kot je bil tudi zamišljen.
Ja.
Kaj je vaše mnenje tako o komunizmu?
A to mogoče boljše od laksizma, recimo, kot neke družbene teorije, ne?
No, jaz, ko sem hodila v srednjo šolo, sem imela predmet samoupravljanje s temelji marksizma in sem marsikaj od tistega takrat verjela.
Kar pa, dobro oceno.
Ja, pet sem imela, zato ker sem se najbolj kregala s profesorjem. Zato mi je dal pet, ker sem z njim debatirala. Ne, ne, ni bil, se pravim, jaz sem imela drugačno mnenje od tistega, kar je on učil, ampak sem imela zato pet, ker sem se z njim kregala in debatirala.
To v nacističnih šolah verjetno ne bo možno.
Jaz nikako...
Dobili in dobili pet.
Čakajte, a zdaj mislite, da jaz zagovarjam nacizem?
Ne, ne, da ne, ne, počem reči, da enačiti komunizem pa nacizem na nobeni ravni verjetno se ne da.
Poglejte, nacizem je povzročil ogromno zla. Kaj je pa naredil komunizem potem po vojni? Je šel isto pot kot nacizem. Se je, a niste gledali filma tega, kaj je Stalin počel v Ukrajini, ne, ali Belorusiji?
Latvijski
film, ja. To je komunizem počel. Oni so delali poskuse na ljudeh.
Ne, se jaz sem čist strinjam, tle zame osebno, se je to zločinska izpeljava nekega družbenega nauka.
In pogledajte, v mirnem času je komunizem zatiral ljudi, a je to zauzemanje za človekove pravice, če tok in tok ljudi konča na golem otoku, če tok in tok ljudi ubitih v teh raznih brezih na zločinski način, če tok in tok ljudi ne sme izražati svoje svobode govora, a se vam to zdi, da je potem komunizem bil kaj boljšega od nacizma?
Ne, nikakor, ampak vse mi jih to hočemo podariti, ne, pač nek družbeni nauk, ki je bil zad.
Ja.
Nacizem je pred tem, ko je sploh prišlo do implementacije v konkretno politiko, je že govoril o manjvrednih, o večjovrednih rasah. Ne?
Ob vsega obsojanja vredno.
V marksizmu imamo omenjeni razredni boj, ne? Ampak nekje ne piše, da treba razrednega sovražnika eliminirati.
Ja, marksizem, v tem je pa razlika. Ja? Nacizem je javno razglašal, kaj bojo delali, komunizem je pa ves čas lagal.
Zaprav, če vam položim na jezik, je sam bolj subtilen bil
ja,
komunizem.
Tako. Tako. In zdaj se pravzaprav isto dogaja. Sloveniji je ena sama laž. Se pravim, jaz nimam nobenih osebnih zamer do nikogar, ker nimam zakaj imeti in mene pravzaprav boli, da je to v slovenskem narodu tako. Mene samo boli, zakaj še vedno v današnjem času, ob vsem vedenju, ki ga imamo o tem, kaj se je dogajalo, še vedno nočemo tega vedeti, nočemo videti resnice in še vedno kujemo v heroje tiste, za katere vemo, da je njihova zgodba izmišljena, olepšana. Jaz sem tudi Tito mahala, pa sem jokala za njim, ko je umrl. Zelo sem jokala, ampak danes pa, ko vem, kaj je bil, pa kako je počel, pa da ni to tisto, kar so nam kazali, pa vendar le ga ne morem imeti več za junaka, ne?
Jaz bi pa mogoče tle izpostavil, nekaj se je ob 1. maju, se je na večini teh delovskih govorov, se mi zdi, se je izpostavilo ta socialni čut oziroma socialna naravnanost prejšnjega sistema v primerjavi s tem. Ker ne vem, ali gre tu preprosto za neko poveličevanje zgodovine iz se strani, mislim, ljudstvo, ali gre tu dejansko za verjetno v aktualni gospodarski krizi za socialne razlike, ki so v večini prebivalstva danes nesprejemljive napram preteklosti.
Ja. No, jaz se strinjam, da je v zadnjem času tudi v Sloveniji, pa tudi v svetu prihajalo do prevelikega razkoraka med delavci, če tako rečem, tistimi najslabše plačami in menedžeri tistimi najboljše plačami. To je nesprejemljivo, to se strinjam. Ampak, če pogledamo komunizem, a so tam bili takrat vsi enaki, nekateri so imeli zelo velike privilegije in ti isti so se s lastninjenjem podjetij so postali največji lastniki in menedžeri in tako naprej. Ne? In so takoj pozabili na tisto idejo komunizma, ko imajo vsi delavci enake pravice. A niso prav isti, kdo je v Sloveniji zdaj lastnik kapitala? A smo mi konzervativci, če tako rečem, desni, a imamo mi kapital?
Vi mislite, pod ekonomsko elito lahko najdemo samo na eni strani, ja, politični
tako,
spektri.
Tako, takoj so pozabili na tisto. In v času komunizma prvič so eni, ki so bili vse čas privilegirani, Drugič, smo bili vsi enako revni, če tako rečemo, dobre službe so bile zagotovljene, ampak že takrat se je vedelo, da se pravzaprav ta stvar ni mogla samo financirati. Zakaj smo mi lahko imeli kredite? Zato, ker je Tito dobival od zahodnih zaveznikov, pa ne vem koga, vse kredite, ki smo jih potem morali odplačevati in kakšna inflacija je bila. To je pravzaprav bilo samo po sebi lažna blagostanje države. Ker ni bilo zaledja od zadej, a ne?
Če gremo malo naprej, ker tu se lahko sam ciklamo v nedogled. Pa bi vprašal, zdaj danes je imel Pottering, ki je imel zaključni govor ob izteku petletnega mandata, tudi vsem poslancem. Izpostavil je, da parlament dobro deluje, čeprav potem na koncu sta prišle dve kritiki, ne, večinoma.
Ja, to so evroskeptiki, ki so vedno kritični.
Ne, čeprav tudi te obratni govori so pa izpadli malo sentimentalno, ker je to nek protokol itd. Pa me zanima, kaj vi menite, bom vprašal obratno, kaj parlament ni storil dobro v teh petih letih, recimo, če lahko izpostavite neke stvari, ker bi parlament lahko deloval bolje, pa mu to ni uspelo?
Ja, gotovo bi se dalo kaj izboljšati, to se čisto strinjam. Kar se pa tiče predsednika Pötteringa, pa jaz mislim, da to ni bila samo vljudnost, ampak dejansko on uživa spoštovanje. Jaz sem ga v začetku poznala kot vodjo politične skupine, kjer je imel ugled, kjer je imel spoštovanje in tudi že takrat, ko je bil izvoljen za predsednika, tudi tisti, ki so imeli svoje kandidate, so mu izrazili pohvalo in spoštovanje in ima dejanski ugled kot nek demokrat, kot bom rekla, kot dostopen, kot skromen človek, ki te vsakič, ko te sreča, te pozdravi, tako da to niso bile zgolj fraze.
Dejansko, ta kritika, ki je bila izražena strani neodvisnih demokratov, če se ne moto se tako imenuje po slovensko, je bilo na pol huškaški govor je bil, ampak je imel nek smisel, češ da pač Pötterink ni opravil dobre naloge pri te lizbonske pogodbe, glede na to, da je bila trikrat zavrnjena, ampak se še vedno pač v parlamentu forsira sprejemanje in
tako, če lahko dodam, predvsem nekateri irski poslanci ne vidijo smisla, če govorimo o pravi demokraciji, zakaj ponavljamo referendum.
No, pogledajte, to so pač evroskeptiki, ki so vedno proti vsem stvarem in seveda oni so morali to svojo kritiko izraziti. Kaj pa po drugi strani, ko je pa veliko več držav oziroma skoraj vse države pa so že ratificirale Lizbonsko pogodbo, a ne? A ni krivično pa do vseh ostalih, ki pa se zauzemamo za to, da zaradi propada v eni državi zdaj se vsa stvar danes je češki senat je danes potrdil.
Ja, jaz bi obrnil argument po tej logiki, bi lahko rekli tudi, da je krivično do Hrvatov, da ne morejo vstopiti zaradi ene države v Evropsko unijo.
Ja, ne, to pa ni res, to pa oni sami ne izpolnjujejo. Mrsi katerih pogojev, zdaj pa Slovenija grešni kolec.
No, ne, če bi Hrvaška izpolnjevala seveda, ne, vse ostale pogoje in bi imela ta nerešen problem Slovenija, bi verjetno slovenska blokada še vedno obstajala, ne, ker je vezana na drugo vprašanje, ampak na vprašanje med Hrvaško in Slovenijo. Če je bilo to res, a bi bilo to krivično do Hrvaške, da ne bi moglo stopiti samo zgolj zaradi ene države?
Jaz mislim, da Slovenija pravzaprav ni proti temu, da Hrvaška ne bi vstopila. Mi smo za to in zainteresirani in je celo dobro. Seveda pa ima vsaka država pravico, da zavaruje tudi svoj nacionalni interes.
No, se je Irska tukaj varuje svoj nacionalni interes, recimo torej, zakaj to ni demokratično?
Ja, samo kaj pa Irska? Mi blokiramo, recimo, blokiramo eno državo, Irska pa blokira celotno Evropsko unijo.
Ja, zavaruje svoj interes.
Ja.
Če se bo ta lizbonska strategija, ne?
Zdaj je Irska v 30-ih, zadnjih 30-ih letih profitirala najbolj od skoraj vseh evropskih držav.
Ampak vseeno ima pravico, izvesti referendum. Demokratično je dovoljeno pravico izvesti referendum. Če so ljudje na referendumu se jasno opredelili, kakšno pravico imajo preostale članice forsirati in usiljevati svojo odločitev države, ki je suvereno odločila na podlagi pravice, ki jo ima. Ne, ki je bila nekako izsiljena, ampak pravica, ki je vnaprej priznana in jo izkoristila. Zakaj govorimo, da je to krivično?
Ne, jaz mislim potem, da taka država, ki se pač, dejstvo je, da smo zdaj tako daleč prišli, da pač na ta način Evropska unija zelo težko funkcionira, da je treba nekaj narediti in zato pač je ta Lizbonska pogodba. Jaz bi rekla, taka država, ki pač se ne mora s tem strinjati, če se večina ostalih držav strinja, naj pač premisli o svojem članstvu v Evropski uniji, če tako pogledamo. Ne? Ker zdaj s tem, ko ne sprejmemo Lizbonske pogodbe, preprečujemo mi tudi nadaljne širitve. Ker pač ugotavljamo, da na ta način, kot zdaj delujejo evropske inštitucije, brez nove pogodbe se pač ne da večane. In same raziskave na Irskem so pokazale prvič, da Irci niti niso dobro poznali Lizbonske pogodbe, drugič, da pač euroskeptikom je uspelo prepričati ostale, da ne govorim o tem, da naj bi celo imela CIA svoje prste vmesane.
Pa premijer je priznal, da tudi ne pozna dobro pogodbe.
Ja.
Zdaj Slovenci tudi ne poznamo dobro te pogodbe. Verjetno poprečno državljan ima pojma, kaj
ja, se samo, pravi. Samo Slovenci...
Ampak so nacionalni parlamenti obšli ljudstvo, ne?
Ja, in Slovenci pač je parlament ratificiral, ker je vlada tako sklenila, medtem ko tam pa je ljudstvo odločalo. Torej bi ljudstvo moralo bolj poznati, o čem odloča.
Kaj se vam zdi bolj demokratično? Kaj se vam zdi bolj demokratično? Da parlamenti, glede takih stvari, ki se dejansko potem tičejo tudi življenja posameznega državljana, zelo konkretno seveda, ne? Da obidejo to demokratično voljo, če lahko temu tako rečemo, ali da prepustimo državljanom Evropske unije, da demokratično in na nek pač ta svoboden način izražena svoje politične volje, izraža svoje mnenje glede določene pogodbe.
Ja.
Kaj bo demokratično?
Jaz sem vsekakor za demokracijo, ampak s tem, če odloča ljudstvo, mora biti pa zares dobro informirano. Zato, ker nažalost se pa veliko krat dogaja, da ni dovolj informirano in da lahko se potem tudi ne ravno najboljše odločijo.
Ja, bila ti tista, ki je zagovarjala, da bi se ta pogodba bolj predebatila
ja,
v Sloveniji,
ja.
Predno, bi šla na, ja, na, ja. Predno bi šla v parlament in da parlament je tudi demokratično izvoljena ja. Institucija. No.
Ja.
Bila ti eno hipotetično vprašanje, sicer taki instrument zaenkrat ne obstaja, ampak a bi se vam zdelo smotrno pri takšni stvari, kot je Lizbonska pogodba, da bi se nadel vse evropski referendum, se pravi referendum naenkrat v vseh državah Evropske unije in potem se lepo vidi, koliko ljudi je za to. Se pravi, ja. Potem zgubimo to možnost, da ena država blokira.
Lahko, seveda, zakaj pa ne? No, kot je že me on spomnil, jaz sem takrat, ko preden je prišel v Sloveniji do te ratifikacije, meni je bilo po eni strani žal, da smo to tako hitro naredili, Slovenija je takrat naredila kot en zgled, ker smo predsedovali, da ni bilo več razprave, več govora o tem, da bi pravzaprav ljudje bolj spoznali, kaj pravzaprav pomeni Lizbonska pogodba, kakšna so pravila v njej, kaj je tam zapisano. Tako pa potem, ko je mimo, že več ni bilo takega zanimanja. Ne?
Torej, prišli smo do konca oddaje EP Interaktivno aktualne debate. Poslušali smo dva intervjuja z Diano Wallis, ki prihaja iz parlamentarne zveze liberalcev v Evropskem parlamentu in pa potem še drugi intervju je bil z Ljudmilo Novak iz Evropske ljudske stranke.
To bi bilo to za danes, skratka lepo jutro še naprej, kolikor ga še ostal in postanite na frekvenci 89,3.